What up, world? This is your very handsome host, Frankie Contreras. And this is Adult Kindergarten, the show that'll make you a little less dumb. And this week, we're going to be focusing mostly on Puerto Rico. Actually, episode 5 is titled, The State of Puerto Rico. It's going to be a good show, guys. But before we get into that, just want to let you guys know that Puerto Rico still needs our help. So there's a specific fund that we'll be endorsing for this episode called the Colectiva Feminista, so the Feminist Collective, and their Post-Hurricane Relief Fund charity link will be attached to this podcast and in any other source as well. But yeah, let's get right into this. Episode 5. Adult Kindergarten. My name is Frankie Contreras, and I'm here with my two very special hosts.
Joe Mazzio.
Steve Dizidor. And we are all about the bass, Joe and I.
We're all...
low voices.
So we're still working on our intro music.
Yeah.
I don't think that... It's happy, upbeat background instrumental.
I mean, it was good. It sounded really good.
I personally really liked it. And what you guys don't know is that's Joe also playing it live on the piano.
We have a very wild setup here. Yeah, so that was me live on the piano. And welcome to Adult Kindergarten.
Yes.
So this is the podcast. Frank, you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, this is the podcast where we try to make our listeners just a little less dumb.
And ourselves, too, because we are we're three big idiots.
Oh, yeah.
Big idiots.
So every week we have a new a guest, a professional that's hopefully going to illuminate us on a certain topic.
Yeah, of course.
And I have a question for you, Frankie.
Yeah, man.
What's your ethnicity? Because from looking at you...
Oh, I mean, yeah.
I think Dominican.
100% Irish.
Irish. That makes sense. What about you, Steve? I'm going to say that you're Irish, Italian, and a little bit Dutch.
You're two-thirds, 100% correct.
Okay.
That makes sense. I am Irish and Italian, basically 50-50, but I guess I have maybe 5 or 10% each of English and Scottish.
Have you ever done the... what's that called? The ancestry.com, when you spit into a vial and...
I have not. The 23andMe thing.
So how does that work? What do they collect from you? Obviously, some form of DNA.
You spit in a vial.
You have to jizz in a vial, and you send it to the jizz lab, and they... That's what I think it does.
Yeah, you get to choose. They say we need either spit or jizz.
I always choose the second. Always choose the second.
Those two. But, all right, so why don't you try and guess what I am, Steve?
You are...
And Frankie.
Obviously Canadian.
Obviously.
Well, yeah, you're too nice. I feel like
it's the way I say it.
It's not because he's nice.
You're too nice.
That's not why.
Because
you also have some Finnish and some Russian, also probably some Scandinavian, Swedish, all those, right?
You have all. And no, you're actually completely wrong. So I'm Italian.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a Puerto Rican, as I like to say.
Wow.
So that brings us into our topic this week, which is Puerto Rico.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Beautiful place that is going through some hard times right now.
Yes, yes.
And nobody, just to let you know about my hard times, nobody believes when I say I'm a Puerto Rican.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I don't look it. I look like a white guy.
It's a hard pickup line.
Yeah. But then I tell them that I have an abuela.
Okay.
I love Cornel. All
right, cool.
And she lives in San Lorenzo, and usually by that point, they believe me. So, Frankie, why don't you welcome our guest and tell us a little bit about him?
It would be great if we did have somebody that could help us learn more about Puerto Rico, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah, and then luckily today we do have such a person.
Whoa.
Yeah, so coming in all the way from Columbia University, we have Mr. Daniel Morales Armstrong. He is a New York Puerto Rican, completing his MA in African American Studies at Columbia University, where he currently studies Black identity in the Puerto Rican context. He's also a full-time educator in a New York City public high school, where he teaches
Sorry.
I teach high all the time.
Teaches high. We teach at high school. This is the way you wrote the copy.
Frankie is high right now, full disclosure.
Oh, no.
Just kidding.
And he runs an international program around blackness in Latin America and diasporas. He also has done research in and on Puerto Rico.
Well, he's pretty accomplished.
Yeah, very.
So, Daniel, why don't you say what's up?
The only reason we're allowed at Columbia University is because he's with us right now. Columbia University would never allow it if just the three of us.
Yeah.
Hi, folks. I'm Daniel. As Frankie said, that's my background. I do not teach high. I teach high school students. And, we do some cool stuff, man. I take students from Washington Heights, and we travel down to the Caribbean once a year. And we have a lot of these important conversations, also about ethnicity, but the intersections of ethnicity, race, and political status.
So just in high school, do you teach 9 through 12? Do you teach a specific grade?
So this is my... all this cool stuff that's written into my description is the bonus stuff that I do at the school. So I'm actually the full-time college counselor.
Oh,
so I run our college office, and then, off of the payroll, I do the other stuff.
Wow.
Okay. So then today we are just three simpletons, and let's pretty much dive into Puerto Rico, and it's such a vast topic to
yeah. Puerto Rico is interesting because a lot of people know that it's a part of America, right? But I think that's the extent, and there's a lot of nuances in the laws and in how Puerto Rico works into America that I think that are very complicated. And so I personally, as a Puerto Rican, I would love to just try and understand a little bit better how Puerto Rico works into America, I feel like you could do that, right? You're probably the best guy.
So Puerto Rico is a small island, 35 miles north to south, 100 miles east to west.
Okay.
It's in the Caribbean, so it's southeast of the Dominican Republic, and it is the last island in the Greater Antilles, and right after Puerto Rico, we start the Lesser Antilles. That's where you have the U.S. Virgin Islands and other islands that lead down into Venezuela, basically. There are about 3.5 million people who live there, and as was stated, they are part of America, right? But really, in a territorial sense. So it's not a state in the way that Hawaii or Alaska that are not connected to the continental contiguous United States are. But also, at the heart of it, Puerto Rico is a colony. And we'll get into that more.
Can you break into that now then? Tell us a little bit about the difference between statehood and territory.
Sure. This goes back more than 100 years. Basically, as long as Puerto Rico has been known by that name, it has been a colony. So Puerto Rico, under that name, has never been a free nation. Before that, it was called Borinquen, which is the indigenous name for the island from the Taino Arawak natives who lived there in the Greater Antilles. But as soon as it was given that name, which means rich port, by the Spanish, it's been known as that ever since. And while the other, I guess, countries in the Greater Antilles and most of Latin America have gotten their independence from Spain or from the Portuguese or the French, etc., Puerto Rico never got that.
Why do you think that is? Is there just no leadership there from the beginning? It was just kind of this nebulous territory that...
So Puerto Rico, geographically, is at the mouth of the Caribbean Sea. And so it kind of served as a bulwark against anyone going into any enemy powers going in to try to take land or resources from Latin America. And so it's a really strategic location. And so that made it super important. In 1898, we had the Spanish-American War, and Puerto Rico, along with the Philippines, etc., was annexed by the U.S. Okay, and so then it became a part of the United States, and it was basically like saying, "I'm taking
annexed is taking in."
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm.
I thought annexed was
adopted.
I was kidding. Yeah. Why did I think that?
No. So basically, what happened with Ukraine a few years back, where Russia basically said, "We're taking y'all. This is
Crimea."
They annexed.
Right.
Or Hitler was big on annexing.
And so, like, yes, also some evil to it.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like an evil, terrible thing, like, mind now. It's like kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
It's kidnapping a territory.
Now, does baby Puerto Rico feel, in a sense, as being taken in that sense, as an annexation, you know? Or does it feel like a good partnership between the U.S. and Puerto Rico?
So, you know, there's all sorts of cognitive dissonance among some of the folks. But there's... You know, people have different feelings about it. You know, some people say that what we have now, which is, you know, a colonial status, but the official name for it is a commonwealth, right? It's called the ELA, Estado Libre Asociado, which is free associated state. And basically that means that Puerto Rico has its own government, but the final word always comes down to the United States. And the one thing that, or one of the several things that Puerto Ricans can't do is vote for president, even though their president is the president of the United States. They cannot, they don't have any representation in Congress. They have a non-voting member. And Puerto Ricans cannot determine their political status, right? So any sovereign nation can decide, we're going to change our governing system from X to Y, right? Or our affiliation to, you know, we're going to join with the country next to us and we're going to create something new. Puerto Rico doesn't have that ability.
So they're kind of just constrained.
Right.
They're just existing.
Mm-hmm.
And that must really hurt their economy, mm-hmm. you know, which is probably really big on tourism, and that's mm-hmm. about it. So, yeah, it's pretty wild. Mm-hmm. It sucks.
Can you talk a little bit about perhaps the internal appetite for statehood then, to maybe feel as if that would they would feel better represented? Because Puerto Rico, 3.5 million people, that's bigger than a decent amount of states in the country, and they're completely, they have no representation. So is there a want for statehood to be able to feel to have more of a say in who represents them and the laws that they have to live under?
Some folks definitely do, right? And the two major camps in Puerto Rico, and I guess in the diaspora, are those who want statehood and those who want to stay a commonwealth. And there's also a significantly smaller group of folks who are looking for independence. I count myself in that also. I think that's the way to go. But mm-hmm. but basically there are heavier numbers for folks who want statehood or right. to stay a commonwealth.
So you mean an independent sovereign nation then? Is that what you
right.
mean? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So is wanting statehood have anything to do with like just getting help, like more welfare, more things like that nature?
More welfare. like, no, Puerto Rico gets, you know, because Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens, they're entitled to federal aid. And so, you know, people can get welfare already, and becoming a state would not change that.
Yeah.
Okay. But basically it's kind of like this feeling of, well, we're part of America, right? We're American, right? From the United, like we're part of the United States. And so just like Hawaii and just like Alaska are not connected to it physically, mm-hmm. But our states, we feel like that could help things out. Right.
So then what's your argument for the independence? Why do you prefer independence over the other options?
So independence would be difficult.
Right.
Right. To say the least. We would have to, you know, rebirth an economy. We'd have to figure out a political system. And, you know, I don't know of any nation that doesn't have some level of corruption in their
right.
in their government. And so, you know, those are some of the arguments against it, but I believe that Puerto Ricans, like all people in the world, have the right to self-determination, right? To decide what their government will be, what their political status will be, and we're being kept from that. Mm-hmm. And so that means that we are at the whims of the United States. And what we have seen throughout the entirety of our relationship with the United States since 1898 is that Puerto Rico ends up becoming the pawn.
Right.
And even though they're what we call plebiscites, which are votes on the island about what Puerto Ricans would like their political status to be,
right.
None of those are ever binding.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, those votes don't really mean anything, right? Because
right.
it's like, well, you know, they have a member of Congress who can't even vote.
Right.
It's just almost like a weird formality. So
it's
what
like,
is strategically, like, why the fuck are we doing this? Like, it seems like just really
we should pick
cruel.
One. We should right? pick one. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we should allow Puerto Ricans on the island to pick them. And
yeah.
I'm a Puerto Rican from the States, right?
Yeah, right.
Born and raised in New York. And so I'm part of what we call the diaspora, which
right.
is all of the people who have left a homeland or who are no longer there, whether they have left by force or voluntarily. And so I'm a part of the diaspora, and so like there's a caveat that goes on my opinions about or my right to have a full say in what happens with the island of Puerto Rico.
Right.
Because I'm not there. And though I lived there briefly, though I visited many times, though I care about it and follow the news about it, right? I don't live a Puerto Rican experience as they do on the island, right? Like I'm up here talking to y'all and they're down there without electricity, without water.
Right,
You know?
Can you talk about diaspora for us? Can you jump into that, what that means?
Sure. The Puerto Rican diaspora is, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, but I know that it's about the same as folks who are living on the island, if not more at this point, right?
Okay.
And so there have been many waves of migration from Puerto Rico to the United States. And I say migration instead of immigration because Puerto Ricans are already U.S. citizens. And, you know, throughout the 20th century, you know, many Puerto Ricans moved to New York. You know, New York still has the largest Puerto Rican population outside of the island. You know, when I was down in Puerto Rico this summer, and people would ask me, you know, where I'm from, I'd say, well, I live in New York. And I would often hear people say, oh, he's from the largest neighborhood in Puerto Rico, New York. and so we definitely have strong representation here, in parts of Jersey, in Orlando now, in Chicago, and some of those waves were for economic opportunity. You know, like you leave your neighborhood to go to another place because you can find a job there and your cousin lives there, etc. But in the 50s at some point, there was kind of like a forced exodus of about 70,000 Puerto Ricans who were basically independence fighters, right? And so basically they, after there was an uprising called the in Jayuya, right, which is a town down there for independence. Basically, the government said, "Hey, look, we're gonna charter a plane and take a bunch of y'all and send y'all to Chicago," right? So they basically took a whole slew of folks who were fighting for independence, who were pro-independence, you know, and I say fighting, you know, anywhere from, you know, guns and taking the post office to, hey, I just believe in a free Puerto Rico.
And the Puerto Rican government did this, why? Because they valued their relationship with the United States for whatever reason? They didn't want that threat there of independence?
So I guess this is a good segue for a little bit of history here.
Yeah.
In 1948, there was something called the Gag Law, right? That was Law 53, La Ley de la Mordaza, which basically made it illegal in Puerto Rico, right, to fly the Puerto Rican flag, as we know it, the one with the triangle, with the one star and the five stripes. It made it illegal to fly the flag, to meet about independence, to talk about independence, to sing songs, any of that stuff. Basically, it was, like I said, a gag order, right, on independence. And that lasted for about 10 years. Right? And so the punishment was you could be put in jail for up to 10 years. They could give you up to $10,000 as a fine. And really it could be, you know, you, if the government were to find you at a pro-independence rally, they could just throw you in jail, even if you were just walking by and said, hey, I'd like to hear what they're saying.
Yeah.
Right? And there were definitely examples of folks who had that thing happen to them.
So was there a fear by the U.S. that Puerto Rico was on its way to independence already, for that to even happen?
So around the mid-20th century, there were a lot of conversations around decolonizing the world, right? And that included the U.N. And basically, the U.N. said, look, if you are going to be a sovereign power as part of the U.N., like, we really need to be critical of the fact that you own colonies, right? And so like this conversation was happening as there was a global rising consciousness around sovereignty and self-determination.
Right. This is the middle 1900s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was a time where that was happening, and then the independence movement started getting a lot of momentum in Puerto Rico, right? And so in 1950, there were uprisings across the islands, right, by the Independence Party. And basically they took the town of Jayuya and they raised the Puerto Rican flag and they said, this is, you know, we are working on declaring independence here. And the government went in and declared a state of emergency. National Guard came in. They bombed the shit out of that town, killed a bunch of people, and then tore down the flag and said, "We're throwing a bunch of y'all in jail."
So the U.S. did this.
Yeah.
In the 1900s.
Right. With the blessing of Luis Munoz Marin, who was the first real Puerto Rican governor of Puerto Rico.
Right. So why did he, what was that relationship with him and America where he didn't want Puerto Rico to be independent?
Munoz Marin?
Yeah.
So he was interested in, at the heart of it, he was interested in what he thought was best for Puerto Rico. And this status of being a commonwealth was supposed to be temporary, right? It was supposed to be this is one step closer to us being able to decide whether it's going to be statehood, independence, etc.
Right.
And so I think that he thought he was doing what was best, but at the same time, it came with a great deal of repression, and it ended up, doing some fucked up things.
Yeah,
now,
death and destruction, that sounds like fucked up.
How much of the U.S. policy based on this, because looking at the chronology of it, the 50s, a lot of U.S. policy, foreign policy, had to do with the global scare of communism, as the conflict. So was our policy towards Puerto Rico sort of designed, because obviously you look at the map and Cuba's close to there, and the Cuban Missile Crisis and the Cold War, how much of that played a role into how we dealt with Puerto Rico?
So much of the groundwork for where we are now was laid before the Cold War and the scares of communism. So Puerto Rico became this Estado Libre Asociado in 1952,
okay.
Right? And you had the revolution in Cuba at the end of the 50s.
Right.
You had the gag law in Puerto Rico in the 40s. And so I think it's closer tied to the U.S.'s desire to have a naval stronghold in the Caribbean.
Oh, okay.
And so, during World War II, the Germans had their U-boats in the Caribbean shooting down something like 400 ships from the Allies, right? And so having Puerto Rico there, and having Puerto Rico as a place where the military could have a presence just in case,
right,
really was an insurance policy for the United States. So I think that had a little more to do with it than communism.
So there wasn't a fear of a communist uprising in Puerto Rico?
I mean, not in any way that dominates the conversation.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Wow.
Ooh. That's pretty heavy stuff, man.
That is.
We're just getting started here. Let's take a short break.
Let's take a short break. We'll be right back with Adult Kindergarten. Stay tuned.
Ah, this is taking forever.
Oh, honey, what's wrong?
I can't seem to scrape the paint off this mirror.
Oh, here, honey, I got you something.
Wow, a golden razor blade. I can't wait to show the guys this. Where'd you get it?
Blotto's, of course.
Gold-plated razor blades, pocket-sized mirrors. Nothing could be more convenient for the hardworking, clean-shaven man on the go. Blotto's has the life accessories you need. And if you have diabetes or just want to play with the medical equipment, stop by Blotto's this weekend for our Shoot 'em Up sale. Blotto's, we make daily habits fun.
Sounds like you got a nasty cough.
Yeah, no shit.
Here, baby. Try this.
Soothe?
Yeah. Soothe annihilates cough and cold symptoms.
Wow, I'm seeing donkeys.
That's the patented cough-killing concoction of codeine, morphine, and alcohol. Your cold will be history. How's your cold now?
Who the hell are you?
I'm your wife, fool.
Soothe kills a cough fast. And for the kid's chesty cough, it's Soothe Junior, the medication that comes in a fun, animal-shaped container kids will love.
Hey, look at me. I'm binging on medication just like Dad. Ugh.
Oh, my God, he's barely breathing.
No, that's just the medicine doing his magic.
Thanks to Soothe, his cough is history. With Soothe, you'll forget you had a cough, your name, or where to properly go to the bathroom. Feel better fast with Soothe.
And welcome back to Adult Kindergarten. Again, we're here with our special guest, Daniel Morales Armstrong. And let's just go quickly and talk about some of the positive aspects of Puerto Rico really quickly.
Great, so...
So just to give some context...
It's a beautiful island.
It took us about an hour to try and figure out what some of the positive things are, just because Puerto Rico's situation is so fucked up. But
yeah,
culturally, Puerto Rico is a very important place. They've done a lot for the world and for the people around them. So can you just talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So you know, we seldom think about Puerto Rico's size in terms of the geographic area that it takes up, right? Like, when we think about Puerto Rico has its own Olympic team, yeah. right? We've been competing in the Olympics since the 40s.
They're really good, too.
Yeah. So when the Olympics came back after World War II, Puerto Rico said, hey, we'd like to position ourselves to have our own team. Right, which is pretty cool, but because the gag law was still in place, they couldn't fly the Puerto Rican flag, and so they had to take a flag from one of the townships, right, and basically make something up to wave during the Olympics.
Wow.
And Puerto Rico has won, I think, something like 12 or 13 medals in the Olympics, and the first gold that we got was in the past Olympics with Monica Pui in tennis. So, interesting facts there. Other areas where Puerto Ricans have really, you know, impacted the world, you know, now you hear about and see people even in Japan having the salsa competitions, you know? Right. So, like, far and wide, salsa, which, you know, in its current iteration, really has strong Puerto Rican influences, right? It's not to say that Puerto Rico is the only place where salsa happens or where there are salsa greats or salsa history, because Cuba also had a great deal of that. But, you know, Puerto Ricans have really put that on the map. And in terms of political representation for Latinos in New York and other major centers, right? Puerto Ricans who were able to come over earlier than, let's say, major waves of Dominicans from, you know, from DR, clearly, a little bit later on, came and started developing political capital, right, and political networks. And so you have still to this day some families of Puerto Ricans in New York State, you know, assembly seats and Senate seats, right? And you see that there are these, you know, political powerhouse families where you'll have the father and then the daughter and then the son who all hold positions and hold power on committees, etc. And so that really, that paved the way in some ways for the, I guess, the political power that other Latino groups have been able to capitalize on. Right now we have a lot of Dominican representatives, Adriano Espaillat, etc.
Yeah.
Who, while we're not going to take credit for their work, you know, like, they put in the work to serve their communities, right? Yeah. They weren't the first brown Latinos to go for these positions.
Right.
And being the first brown Latinos to go for the positions comes with opposition, comes with hatred, comes with pushback, etc. So that's something that, you know, Puerto Ricans have definitely been a part of.
So I we could talk more about some of the current events recently, but do you think there's a political realignment happening, because there will be inevitably people from Puerto Rico that need to come relocate to the mainland United States. Do you suspect that there will be a lot more Puerto Ricans coming to the mainland United States and then helping obviously affect elections as a result by their own political beliefs?
So I do have a question on, based on that too. So you said that Puerto Ricans can't vote for our president, right? So what? But if they live in, if they move to the mainland, then they can.
Right. So basically, if you are a resident of the island of Puerto Rico, you are a citizen, but you can't vote for president. But as soon as you move and you change your address to XYZ in New York City, or Florida, or anywhere else, then automatically can vote for president.
Right. Because I've read that there's up to maybe, like, you know, if 100,000 people from Puerto Rico relocate to Florida, depending on how they vote, that could completely change. Because Florida is one of the closest toss-up states in any election. You win Florida, chances are you win the election. So do you think that's something that's possible, that could happen, that we're looking at?
Well, I mean, actually, on that note, there was, I forgot the numbers, but there was actually a lot of voters that voted for Donald Trump that identified as Puerto Ricans.
Right.
So, yeah.
So I'm not saying it would swing it either way, but if 100,000 people from the island of Puerto Rico moved to Florida, where I think the election was decided by 200,000 votes, and it's one of the biggest states in the country, that could obviously play a big effect, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we, over the past 10 years, there have been more than 500,000 Puerto Ricans that have relocated from Puerto Rico to the mainland U.S.
Right.
Right? So, like, that exodus was already happening.
Right.
It's just, you know, speeding up now.
Right.
Right? So, I'll tell you, like, I saw a stat from one of the on-the-ground news organizations there that was saying that in 3 days, once they started opening up flights to the mainland again, there were 10,000 Puerto Ricans that relocated to Florida.
Wow.
And we don't know if it's permanent, temporary, etc., but like with the number of houses that got destroyed in Maria, like I would assume that some of it would be permanent. Now, you also have, you know, people's political leanings.
Right.
So you definitely have conservative folks in Puerto Rico. Right. You have liberal folks. You have...
What would you say the breakup is? Is it more one way or the other? Is it kind of like the country where it's almost 50-50, it feels like?
You know, I can't say. Right? Okay. But I assume that those who are interested in a status quo political status might be closer to the conservative end.
Right.
And then, you know, generally folks who are pushing for independence are farther left.
Right. So, elephant in the room then, what do you think what is the overall feeling on Donald Trump in Puerto Rico? Obviously in his response in the wake of...
So, like, there's no way to justify the response.
Right.
And really part of... I mean, this brings us into the hurricane.
Right.
Part of the reason why the impact of the hurricane has been so terrible for Puerto Rico is because Donald Trump is a hateful and incompetent shitbag, right?
Yes.
And, you know, yeah.
No, I... you know, no that, disagreement.
That was a light way to put it. Yeah.
And so, basically, the impact of the hurricane, right, which hit every municipality in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how small it is,
yeah.
Right? It hit every single, hit and impacted every single municipality in Puerto Rico.
So Puerto Rico, just for the record, in case you live under a rock, was devastated by Hurricane Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Completely devastated.
Yes.
Not most of the island didn't have power, cell service.
Still doesn't.
And still doesn't, yeah, currently. So they're going through a rough time right now, and Donald Trump's response has been less than ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Even less than that, I think. So,
some stats on that, right?
Yeah.
The devastation was across the whole island. The official death toll, as of the last time I checked yesterday, was 48.
Wow.
But people on the ground are saying that it's in the hundreds, right?
Wow.
You have people who are dying because they can't get medical treatment. You have people...
100,000?
No, no, close to a few hundred.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But I would assume it's anywhere between 400 or 500 and 1,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right? And, you know,
so
people are burying their dead in their backyards.
So I would assume that played into, those numbers played into what Donald Trump said when he compared that to, like, the travesty that happened to Hurricane Katrina. And it's like, well, you know, Maria wasn't that serious. That's what he said.
You should be proud. Only 16 people died, right? It's not like a real catastrophe like Katrina.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, one of the differences there is that Katrina was absolutely horrible, right? Like, nobody's downplaying that,
yeah.
Right? But the areas affected were also accessible by nearby states or from relief efforts from nearby states by land.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Everything in Puerto Rico is affected. You can't drive in there with the cavalry,
yeah.
Right? Like, you have to come in through the ports, and some of those ports are damaged, right?
Right.
You have to fly in through the airports, and some of the airports are damaged.
Right.
So that makes it even worse. And now, the estimates are that between 80 and 90% of people in Puerto Rico still don't have electricity.
Wow.
Right? More than 35% of them have no running water, and there's a medical crisis going on. You know, Puerto Rico serves as a dialysis center for much of the Caribbean. So people who are going there for those services,
yeah.
Right? You know, I think there's some like 60 dialysis centers, and over a third of them were seriously compromised, you know? And without gasoline, without diesel to run the generators, they can't give these necessary services. So cancer treatments have stopped, dialysis is down. Like, I've heard, and, you know, everybody's always like, oh, you know, we need to get official confirmation. But my mom got a text from a friend in Puerto Rico,
yeah.
Right? Because there's some cell service, whose cousin, sister, et cetera, somebody works in a hospital. And she said that everybody in their intensive care unit died.
Wow.
Wow.
Every person in intensive care in that hospital died because...
So they didn't transport those people out before the hurricane? Because weren't they doing that in Florida before the hurricane hit there? Irene, I think, or whichever hurricane hit Florida, they were... The hospitals that were going to be affected, mm-hmm. Anybody in critical condition or
Irma.
Whatever.
Irma.
Irma, yeah. They, mm-hmm. they flew them out of there. So they didn't do that in Puerto Rico?
So I'm not sure.
Okay.
Right? But also, like, we're talking about all of the people who are in critical condition in all of the hospitals in Puerto Rico. Like, to what extent is that even possible?
Right.
And a lot of folks were preparing for being without power for 2, 3, 4 days. Right. And now we're 25 days out.
Yeah.
And most people still don't have power. Some people have never seen or still have not seen a single relief aid worker go to their town because, you know, more than a third of Puerto Rico is the mountains in the middle.
Which like differs very differently than what I read on what Donald Trump says when he says that, you know, we send a lot of people, that there's a lot of, you know, I'm actually very proud of the work that our FEMA and other relief programs are actually
doing. Delusional. He is delusional.
Okay. But he's never going to admit he's doing anything wrong, ever.
Right.
That's just kind of his history. Now, how much do you think of, like, sort of the insufficient response is due to part of the sort of bureaucratic hole Puerto Rico is in? Because it's not a state. It, you know, we kind of treat it like a political football. We don't. It's part of the country, but it's not a state. Mm-hmm. How much do you think of our lack of response has to do with that? Like with Texas, with Florida, it was much more immediate. With Puerto Rico, it's like I also don't know if. Do you think that there's a decent amount of people that don't even know Puerto Rico is part of the United States, and that has to do with the way we react to these things?
I think definitely there's also a racialized aspect to it, and the fact that Puerto Ricans are colonial subjects of the United States definitely gives us a second-class citizenship. And so I absolutely think that it's a part of it. You know, FEMA, you know, is a service that Puerto Ricans are entitled to,
right?
Like, they pay federal taxes, right? And so the federal taxes that go towards FEMA say that when it's time for a natural disaster to happen, you're entitled to those services.
Yeah.
And it's not being met with an adequate response from FEMA. I heard, you know, I saw something on the news that said that one of the FEMA workers was saying, it's not our responsibility to distribute food and water and life-sustaining essentials to the people of Puerto Rico. That's the job of the mayors. And you have some mayors like Carmen Cruz in San Juan who are out there, like, wading through the water, finding people in houses and things like that. But, like, some places don't have electricity, like, and are unable to provide that service.
So let's touch on taxes just a little bit as well. Okay, so a Puerto Rican residents, do they pay taxes to the U.S. still?
Mm-hmm.
And so but they don't pay, like, state taxes or anything, or federal. Do they pay federal taxes?
Yeah. And they pay sales tax, you know, like, there are taxes that are happening in there. Now, this is not my level of my area of expertise about the exact taxes.
Yeah, but, yeah. I think the main point being, though, is that when you pay taxes, you're paying those with the expectation of service or protection or something like that. And it seems
also representation.
And representation. And Puerto Rico, not only are they not getting it, but they're getting berated in the news for asking for it and told that they should be happy with what they got and that this response was valid and good. And so it just seems really... seems really fucked up to me.
As far as taxes go, like, Puerto Rico is kind of a loophole in the sense that a lot of billionaires now are starting to actually move into Puerto Rico,
and
they're starting to create businesses and quote unquote help the Puerto Rican economy. But when in a sense that whenever they make a lot of revenue, they actually don't have to pay federal taxes. Businesses don't have to pay federal taxes to the U.S. So, in a sense, these business owners are making almost double to almost triple the amount that they would make. And all they have to do is move and be a resident of Puerto Rico in order to achieve that.
Right.
So, maybe the next few years, we might see more businesses now moving and originating in Puerto Rico now. I'm not sure how that will affect the...
So, like, their corporate headquarters will be in Puerto Rico, but without actually distributing jobs to Puerto Rico?
Yeah. Well, it's very muddy. So that also plays into the fact that there's a lot of the powerful people in the U.S., the people with money, there really is no benefit in Puerto Rico becoming a state for that very reason.
Right.
Because once it becomes a state, then that little loophole goes away.
Right.
Can
you touch on their debt then and how all this kind of ties into it?
Yeah, because you hear Trump saying that they owe Wall Street a lot of money and calling them out on their debt. And there's a lot of conflicting stories about, you know, what their debt is, where it comes from, how Donald Trump has influence and added to that debt. So if you could just kind of break that down, that would help a lot.
Sure. So Puerto Rico owes, I think it's like $78 billion, right? in debt.
Which compared to what America owes, it's not that bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah, doesn't America, like I mean, there's a building in Manhattan where, like, you can see the national...
Yeah, we actually count debt. how much money we owe.
It's like, fuck you, China, look how much money we're never gonna pay you back. So I don't get it, like, I don't get what the big deal is about the debt.
The other thing is that our debt has never been audited, right? And so there's a belief that some of the debt, over the past, I think, 10 years, I think in 2005 it was something like $23 billion, and now it's more than $75 billion, right? So something else happened, right? And it's unclear to the people of Puerto Rico where that debt came from, right? Who it was for, and whether those were legal transactions that were made. And every time there's a huge push to audit the debt, and basically the federal government's pushing back on that, and they're saying, no, 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 you don't need to audit debt. You don't need to know who it's going to.
So it's a push from Puerto Rican citizens to audit the debt.
Right.
Wow.
And there is significant pushback. They're saying, don't worry about it, but you owe this much and you need to pay it. So in 2016, there was something created by the federal government and this was pre-Trump, so you know that we've been fucking Puerto Rico for a while, called PROMESA. It's a PROMESA bill, and it's an oversight council that was established to basically run all of Puerto Rico's finances, right? And they're able to impose austerity measures, which means that any way that they see fit to balance the budgets, they're able to do so. And so what they've done is, over the summer, they closed, and this is before Maria, right? They closed close to 200 schools in Puerto Rico, right? Like public schools. They've cut municipal services significantly. The University of Puerto Rico, which has, you know, more than 10 campuses and educates much of the island, right? And remember that they're eligible for Pell Grants, so that means that they can get federal aid to go to college. And Puerto Rico has a pretty high rate of folks going on to higher education and completing that, right? They cut the UPR budget by $500 million, right? So more than 60% of their budget was cut.
As their debt is supposedly running up.
Right, right. You know? And so, like, think about the impacts of these things, right? Yeah. You have an entire generation now, like, starting now. You've already had people dropping out of college because of it, right? Mm-hmm. But now you're going to have a whole, like, 5 to 10 or however many years these kind of cuts stay of people who are not getting educated, right? Are not becoming, you know, are not having the credentials to become professionals, you know, with degrees.
Only making the problem worse.
Right, right. And then that changes, like, when, imagine that you are one of those students who went to college and then had to drop out because of this. How does that affect the narrative that you have for your children then and your grandchildren about whether they should pursue higher education?
Yeah.
Right? So it's going to have a snowball effect. It
has implications, and they're not that great.
Yeah.
No.
Wow. All right, well, let's take a another quick break, and then we'll be right back to adult kindergarten.
Hey guys, Frankie here. With a quick word from one of our sponsors at Wheels. Wheels stands for Washington Heights Expeditionary Learning School. Wheels. Essentially, it's a program in New York City, where right now they've chosen the brightest 8 students, and they're going to send them packing to Peru, to Lima, Peru, so they can finish their research that they've been working on so hard since December. Of course, this is not a free endeavor. So right now, Wheels has an online goal to raise about $7,000. And any dollar at all helps, guys. You know, an extra dollar here means, you know, Julio might get an extra bag of chips or another glass of water. So this seems like a really good program, guys. There's a link attached to the bottom of our link. Have a look at it and please donate. That's all.
The day of liberation is here. Throughout history, only the biggest and strongest survive. Being big means you're successful, and women love big men. Kilimanjaro. And as a successful man, you need to feel comfortable when you're sitting down to eat.
Kilimanjaro.
Clothes for the bigger man. Don't be bound by society, bogus medicine, and the media with their unhealthy focus on being skinny. Don't be constrained by trying to squeeze into a triple X. Bored of feeling like a man in a sausage skin in your size 48 jeans? Bored of being uncomfortable?
Kilimanjaro,
the clothes shop for enormous men. We're fighting to end hunger. Yours.
Kilimanjaro.
And welcome back to Adult Kindergarten, the show where we try to make you a little less dumber. And I'm Franklin Contreras, once again, here with Joe Mazzio and Steve, and our special guest.
Steve what?
Steve
from Blue's Clues.
You still don't know how to say your name. You kind of look
and
like
Blue.
Steve from Blue's Clues.
Yeah, you kind of do.
You could pull that off for Halloween.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I gotta just see that. To see the murderous eyes, too.
The murderous eyes.
Okay.
And again, we're here with our very, very special guest, Harvard graduate, Mr. Daniel Morales Armstrong.
Harvard graduate. Let's let that one.
Yeah, I feel like I had to sneak that in.
That intelligence you're hearing is a Harvard graduate.
He's kind of telling us the sad story of Puerto Rico.
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's the story.
It's the real life, man.
It's the story, but it's also the sad. It's a sad story.
All history is sad. Like,
it's
right?
True.
Like,
yeah.
100%.
But I think that it's interesting because, you know, Puerto Rico is something that a lot of Americans hear about, you know, and most of them would, I assume, know about, but the story behind it and how actually, if you think about the implications and what's going on, how dark it really is and how tragic and sad it is, you know, it's kind of a shame and a bummer that more people don't know and aren't taught about this stuff.
Well, it's because we're taught the wrong things, man. We were taught that Christopher Columbus was the best guy on the planet.
He sailed the ocean blue, and
he had nice blonde hair and perfect white teeth, and yeah, like, it's...
Is there anybody else like that in modern times with blonde hair and white teeth?
Perfect white teeth? That's actually a fraud?
Yeah. Who could? I can't think of anybody. I can't think of anybody.
Oh, Jesus. Ah, jeez. All right, so let's focus on now. So we talked about the past, relationship with the U.S., Puerto Rico and the U.S. in the past. We talked about kind of the present. So let's kind of delve into a little bit about the future, in a sense. Okay. The future of Puerto Rico. So I will allow Mr. Daniel take it away.
Sure. So, you know, as was tradition from our last break, I'd like to give some positive.
Oh, shit. All right, fine.
So in the wake of...
Only sad stories here.
That's it. Yeah, it's like the roller coaster for you folks. Like, very short highs and very deep lows.
It's like heroin.
With a roller coaster that just keeps going down.
It's like heroin. It's like, you just get like a nice little 2-second high, and it's just like, ooh.
Frankie knows from experience about the heroin. Is that
there's the episode named Heroin, the Puerto Rican story.
Oh, good lord.
Has Puerto Rico ever had a drug problem? It's not really a positive thing, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, has Puerto Rico ever had a drug problem? Okay.
So, we're going to do some positive, as we promised.
Well, depending on the drugs, that could be a positive, you know?
Now drugs are bad, I guess.
Pot's not bad, we could be honest.
I've actually never smoked pot. Mm-hmm.
I would advise, try it. Oh. Just once, you know.
That's a positive idea.
I don't anymore, but it was fun while it lasted.
Okay. And then I'll take your advice on heroin, too.
All right, folks. So that's the positive.
Cool, positives, yeah. It's positive.
The positive. Right. Yes. So although the federal government has not responded anywhere near, you know, the level that is needed, right, or the level that is humane, you know, Puerto Ricans on the island have been working together to feed, to save, and to help each other, right? So you have Puerto Ricans who are chopping down trees that are in the middle of the road, that are blocking roads, who are bringing water and food to the elderly, who are helping out folks who are in hard-to-reach areas and saying, like, look, you know, if I have a natural spring on my property, let me set this up so this can be a water spout for the community so people can actually get water and things like that. And those are things that basically FEMA and the federal government are saying, fuck y'all, we're not gonna help out.
Right.
Wow. And so, like, Puerto Ricans on the island are really coming together for that. And Puerto Ricans in the diaspora, remember, who are, you know, a sizable, like, in the millions.
Yeah.
The diaspora has responded and is continuing to respond, right? And that's one of the things that's been really heartwarming for me, because as a member of the diaspora, I don't feel alone in my desire to help. Yeah. Right, and I don't have to reinvent the wheel when I'm thinking about helping Puerto Rico. Right, so if that's a, you know, a thing where on Tuesday when I'm walking home from work, you know, that I'm reading the news on my phone, and then I see that there's a guerrilla journalism initiative with Rosa Clemente, where they're going down there to report the real news that's not happening in mainstream media.
Right.
You know, actually talking to people, actually helping out, and they're saying, "Look, we need some extra funds to continue being here for another 2 days." You know, like, I can boom, get on Venmo and send $25. You know, like,
right.
I can go onto their website, I can share their posts, I can do those things, you know. And so there are lots of opportunities for people to help, and the diaspora has really been holding it down, right? So, like, within days there were cartons and shipping containers full of aid already on their way down to Puerto Rico.
Wow.
Right? The unfortunate news is that the aid is being held hostage basically in the ports, right? Instead of being distributed beyond San Juan, which is the capital, the aid is just sitting there. And so some of the food that's been sent is literally rotting, right?
Right.
At the same time, there are Puerto Ricans who are starving to death who need that food.
And what's the problem? Why can't we get it from where it is to where it's got to be?
So, like, it's super complicated, multiple reasons. Like, it comes down to incompetence, it comes down to a lack of prioritization, and I think bureaucracy and red tape.
Yes.
And you have also Puerto Ricans down there who are like, "Yo, I'm happy to help." And they're like, "Well, we don't have any trucks that can bring the stuff to the center of the island," right? And then Puerto Ricans who are like, "Yo, I've been driving trucks my whole life, let me in there." And the federal relief efforts will say, "Well, I need your XYZ license so that you can drive this truck." And it's like, "Well, my house was destroyed. Right? I don't know where the fuck it is. It's in a river somewhere, right? Or I never got it, but I have been driving trucks with this company forever."
Right.
Right? And so, like, people who want to help and are capable of helping are kept from help.
So then do you see the recovery effort happening from the coasts inward? So, like, basically the people living on the out of it are going to get the aid and the help first before the people inner island get it? Is that the process of which sort of the recovery effort is going to happen?
So recovery is happening in San Juan in the most concerted efforts, right? And basically the people who are closer to San Juan are feeling some of that.
And where is that geographically, San Juan?
On the northern coast.
There's
a bay on the northern coast, and that's, you know, people in those areas are getting the aid easiest. Now, there are helicopters flying throughout the island, military helicopters, who are surveying, but although they could be airdropping water and airdropping food and things like that, they're not, right? And these FEMA care packages, a dinner is a pack of Skittles and I forget what else goes with it, like a sandwich and a pack of Skittles, you know? How are you, when you are being malnourished because you're not eating at all, how do they expect that fucking Skittles are gonna be the answer? Right? Other than the fact that you can share them, right? The 40 Skittles in a bag you can share with your family of five,
Jesus.
Right? And all y'all would just be a little bit more hungry after having five of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or eight of them apiece. So, all right, back to positive. the diaspora is responding. There are fundraisers happening all the time. There are events happening all the time. There are organizations that are doing work. There are people sending relief supplies and people who are going down there. So, like, right now, my parents are down there, right? And they picked up and they went about a week ago to get my grandparents. Right, their flight back was canceled and delayed by a few days. But you have people in the diaspora who are saying, "Look, I'm going to go and take care of my own." Right, I'm planning to go down there in December at some point to help out. Also, to say, like, you know, can I organize a small group to go down there to go work with a specific organization to help out for a week or 10 days or something like that?
So, are there flights going to and leaving Puerto Rico more consistently now? Because I know that was kind of in question.
Right. So now, like, as the airports have, you know, been progressing in their, like, reconstruction efforts, There are.
Okay.
All right. Cool. But some of those flights are prone to be, you know, delayed or canceled.
Yeah.
And there was also some significant price gouging happening. Those one-way tickets out of Puerto Rico were, some of them were $2,000.
Jesus. Now, what do you think the, you know, I heard Chris Christie, the governor of Jersey, discuss sort of...
Good old Christie.
Good old Chris Christie.
Doritos, he was talking about legislation.
I heard him talk about, in the wake of Hurricane Sandy, sort of the return to normalcy is when kids go back to school, there's gas in your car. That took a couple of weeks in Jersey. How far away are we from that in Puerto Rico? People being able to go back to their homes, for some people that's not an option, but, you know, get gas in the car, kids back to school, those kind of things. How far are we out from that?
So there have been some significant gains in the past few weeks in terms of the lines for gas getting shorter.
Right.
So, like, at the beginning, it was like gas stations closed down, you're in a line for 10 hours, and then you get a water bottle full of gasoline, right? And now it's somewhat easier to get that, right? That being said, I don't want to downplay how difficult it still is to get any resources down there, right? And so the reconstruction effort is going to take years.
Jeez.
You know? So, like, there are parts of the island where the estimates are that it'll take about 6 months to get electricity back. And for those who don't have renewable energy, right? And,
right.
We in Puerto Rico, there's still the old power grid, right?
Right.
And that's why everything's still shut down. And so, like, there's going to be a push now, hopefully, to use renewable energy so that, you know, because of global warming, when we get more hurricanes of the sort,
right?
You know, like, we'll be able to get back online quicker.
So that leads me right into the next question. That's another, obviously, we look to the future. That's one of the biggest problems the globe's going to have to deal with, climate change. But as far as Puerto Rico, how susceptible are they to continuous hurricanes and, you know, rising oceans, and how that will affect their way of life, their economy, you know?
So yeah, very susceptible. They're, you know, they have hurricane season in the Caribbean, right? And in PR, like, we've been getting slammed. You know, you have Hurricane Irma that hit in early September, right? And there's a town called Loíza, and this is another way that, like, the racial aspect gets folded into it. A town called Loíza, which is basically what Puerto Ricans regard as our black city, right? That got ravaged by Hurricane Irma, right? It's 20 minutes east of San Juan, right? Which is, like, doing the best out of all of the cities in PR right now.
Yeah.
And more than 80 families were left without homes, right?
Wow.
Because the resources are not distributed equally adequately, right, in Puerto Rico, and particularly for blacker areas, they find that there's... you know, they find that the support for building and infrastructure and all that stuff is lower, and has been historically. And so, is it going to affect Puerto Rico moving forward? Hell yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if there were, you know, hopefully not similar, but at least Category 3 hurricanes that we'll experience. You know, and the last one of this magnitude was in 1928.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the U.S. had an inadequate response also, and basically used Puerto Rico as a political pawn to say, all right, it destroyed your sugar economy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do is take a snapshot of your sugar economy right after the hurricane. Right. And cap your exports of sugar at that level. Right. For the next 5 years or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Why?
You know, the U.S. has long been run by shitbags. You know? and basically, at the time, the U.S. stood to gain from Cuba's sugar economy prospering. Right?
Okay.
And so basically, it positioned Puerto Rico as a weaker economy for sugar at that time.
So the main export of Puerto Rico, is it plantains or sugar or what?
Yeah, I got to get back to you on that. Right. I know that we do coffee, we do sugar, but we import, like, Puerto Rico imports a lot of its food, right? Like, we moved away from an agricultural economy. And now you have people who it's like young Puerto Ricans returning to the island from the diaspora or on the island who are like, hey, we'd like to rebuild an agricultural economy here because we have some lush ground that we can use.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, just to get back to climate change for a second, because in the United States, for whatever reason, that somehow has become a political issue, not a scientific issue. You have half the country who doesn't realize scientific fact is something, mm-hmm. hey, we're in big trouble if we don't do it. Is there that similar strain in Puerto Rico as well, or because they're so susceptible being on an island? Like, is there that anti-science belief there? Is there that strain in Puerto Rican life, or is there people really worried about it?
You know, so I can only speak from my experience because when I was down there doing research, it wasn't focused on like environmental stuff to that extent. Right. And so I don't have like a fully informed response about that. I know that there's some renewable energy. There are like a bunch of massive wind turbines in the south. Mm-hmm. And so there are people utilizing it. And in Vieques, which was hit really hard, in Culebra, which is a small island that's also part of Puerto Rico, I've heard of people who have had energy the entire time, right? Like after, even though they got hit by the hurricane, they were able to, you know, continue using electricity, etc., because they had a hybrid system, you know, like a generator and solar panels and things like that. And so, like, you know, do I think that there are definitely some folks down there who are like, science isn't real?
Right, yeah.
You know? Yeah, I'm sure. You know, and I'm sure that
the earth is flat.
Yeah.
I'm sure they might have a Trump sign that got washed away from their yard, you know?
The ultimate irony.
Jeez. Jesus.
So, yeah. That's what I got on climate.
Oh, man. So, I guess, can we, to jump in a little bit more on the Jones Act?
Sure. So the Jones Act is one of the things that has strangled Puerto Rico, and there have been multiple iterations of it over the years. And so the first one that's important to talk about is in 1917, and that's the one that about a month before the U.S. went into World War I declared Puerto Ricans U.S. citizens. Okay. And that was without conferring with Puerto Ricans like at all. They basically said, hey, look, we're going to do. And around that time, they also did a valuation of the Puerto Rican peso, right? Which is instrumental in crippling the Puerto Rican economy so that the U.S. could play a larger role in Puerto Rico and create a dependency. And so basically they were like, hey, look, your peso ain't worth shit, right? So we're going to put the U.S. dollar here and we're just going to convert whatever you had already into U.S. dollars and looks like you ain't got any money. Right.
Wow.
So that's happening around that time. And then they're also like, hey, suddenly you are U.S. citizens. Right. And so it was one of those things where just like becoming an Estado Libre Asociado, they're kind of like these hollow gestures on the part of the U.S. of saying like, hey, you know, it's not so bad being a colony. Right. Like y'all are American citizens. You can travel throughout the world. And you know, you're not a colony, you're, you know, an ELA and you're a commonwealth, and that's different, you know. So this becomes one of those things. I've heard historians say, so like the popular opinion is that the Jones Act in 1917 was made so that the U.S. government could then use Puerto Ricans in World War I. But I've also heard historians say that wasn't the primary impetus for it. Like they were, you know, it was a secondary benefit. And what ended up happening was that whether or not people had registered for U.S. citizenship, they were recruited to fight in the war.
Right.
You know, and Puerto Ricans have fought in every major war since World War I.
Wow. Right.
1920, the Jones Act that is a major part of this conversation is the Merchant Marine Act of 1920, which basically puts restrictions on who and where Puerto Ricans can get imports from, and so foreign vessels have to, right, go to Fort Lauderdale somewhere in Florida. So let's say that we are getting an import from the Dominican Republic, our neighbor to the west, right? That ship has to go to Florida, right? Unload all of its stuff have the stuff repackaged by American workers and put on an American ship, and then that ship has to go to Puerto Rico, right? And who pays the difference, right? Puerto Ricans, right? That's passed on to the Puerto Rican people. And so the cost of living is higher, right? And the products that you could buy for, a product you could buy for $15 here in the States might be $22 there or $28 there, you know? And the average income is lower in Puerto Rico. I hope I get this part right. is lower in Puerto Rico than in Mississippi, which is one of the poorest states.
And so I'm assuming the point of the Jones Act, or this iteration of it at least, is to keep Americans working, it sounds like, right? And so
that's part of it. And also, like, hey, we're suspicious of, like, foreign stuff coming into our ports.
Right.
You know? And remember, the U.S. wants Puerto Rico as an important naval center.
Right.
And in fact, for years, the U.S. was testing out bombs in the island of Vieques, which is also part of Puerto Rico.
Right.
And they were, you know, in our lifetimes kicked out.
So let's say that, I mean, there was no Jones Act. How does that change their economy? Like, what is this?
So it lowers the cost of imports.
Okay.
And it allows for things like aid to come in the case of our future hurricanes that will happen. Aid to get there quicker, right? So Cuba offered to send aid almost immediately, right?
Right.
And what happened?
They couldn't.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and then the U.S. was basically saying, like, no, we got this, right? Trump is saying, we're doing a great job, right?
Right.
And yet all this aid that we need and could have from surrounding areas, right, is not able to come in. Right? And so he lifted the Jones Act for 10 days, right? Which was something that, like, as far as I know, has never happened before for Puerto Rico, right?
Okay.
And so it was seen as this really good thing, because it was like, now we can get aid, we can get stuff, we can get imports, things like that, and it reduces the cost, so we can actually get that. But what needed to happen was that it needed to be extended, right?
Remember? Yeah, 10 days isn't a long time at all, if you think about the scale of destruction there and what they actually need.
How long would have been an okay time?
Indefinitely.
12.
Definitely 12 days.
So, like, literally, at the very least, months.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So there could be some sort of a, like, if it was from a Tuesday to a Wednesday that he decided to suspend it temporarily, right? Which was done almost immediately for Harvey and
Florida,
Irma,
right?
And yet it took a week to do for Puerto Rico, and only happened for 10 days, and the decision was made from one night to the next, you know? And so did it give other countries the time to plan for that?
Right.
No.
Yeah. Was it even announced that was going to happen, or that just kind of happened?
So there was pushback, people were fighting for it, they were saying, hey, you need to repeal the Jones Act. And then all of a sudden we hear Trump says Jones Act is going to be suspended. Yay, everyone gets happy, right?
Right.
For 10 days, right?
Right.
I remember I spoke to somebody in Puerto Rico who's in one of these community organizations called Colectivo ILE about that very thing.
Right.
And she was saying that at the time when I spoke, maybe 2 weeks ago, there were 3 months worth of food, water, and diesel just sitting in the docks.
Oh, wow.
Right? And while that's happening, people dying because they need the diesel for the generators for the hospital. People dying because they need food or water.
Right. So are there people advocating to get rid of the Jones Act?
Yeah.
All together, right? Is that what John McCain is working on?
So John McCain's doing that.
John McCain is a confusing man. I can't tell if I should hate him or
no. John McCain's a good man. John McCain, you could like John McCain.
What was the thing that he was like in a hospital?
Brain surgery.
Yeah, brain surgery. You got cancer, man.
And like he like got suited up just to vote no.
Vote no on the Obamacare repeal.
Yeah.
At 2 a.m. He's
pretty gangster.
Put his thumb down. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's definitely a nuanced character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Certainly.
The Maverick. So he's advocating to get rid of the Jones Act.
Yeah, and you know, I think that it would be a good thing to repeal, as long as there's not a whole bunch of political mumbo jumbo that's put into that bill that also screws Puerto Rico down the other
end. And it sort of makes sense because Puerto Rico is not really a state, but still we have this restriction on them, which is crippling their economy.
Mm-hmm.
We're increasing their debt, making us pay back this debt, and also berating them for actually owing money and getting support.
And you see some of the ways that Like, it's the combination of austerity measures because of Promesa and the Jones Act on increasing costs that here our sales tax is between 8% and 9%.
Yeah, 8%.
Right? Over there, sales tax is 12.75%.
Jesus.
Wow. You know? So it increases that much. Remember, yeah, their income is lower, right? There's one other thing I was going to say, but I forgot. So let's just keep on moving. There's so more bad news in the tank.
As it relates to the Jones Act, then, obviously, as it relates to the future of the of recovery, how does the Jones Act, in your view, affect the recovery efforts and moving forward, what the government should do and the posture towards it should be?
So, absolutely.
Full repeal of the Jones Act?
Full repeal. And at the very least, because there is often in Congress and in the White House this idea that, like, okay, what can I do that would help people, and how can I do the exact opposite plus an extra fuck you?
Yeah.
You know? So, like, knowing that they're probably not going to go for the option that's best for humans.
Right.
You know, at least extending that, that lifting the Jones Act for 9 months, a year, you know? With that, there can be more efforts happening there. And really, here's, you know, what needs to be done, right? There needs to be an audit of the debt.
Okay.
Right? If they're not going to cancel it altogether. Right? So cancel, and if not, audit the debt. Right?
What will the audit get accomplished? What is that? What's the best thing that can come away from an audit?
It'll probably just expose the U.S. kind of bullshitting it. It's like, oh yeah, you owe me $10 for that.
Well, it's also like, if you guys did a credit thing last time,
yep,
right? Like, taking stock of what you owe and where.
Right.
Like, that experience of, like, getting your credit report and looking at what you owe and to who,
yep, yeah,
right, really is kind of like, okay, so now I know how I can approach this,
gotcha,
right? But also, it can help us determine which of those deals were made illegally, right? So that we
legally
then...
Illegally by whom?
So by the Puerto Rican government.
Gotcha.
Right? And there's some questions about some of the deals that were made that are like, was it actually legal to do? And if it's not, then we can, you know, work on negating those contracts, right?
Right.
And so tearing away the debt that is not real, right? But really, like, you know, it is almost solely the United States' fault,
yeah,
right? Like, remember that those the increased prices on imports, right, are because we have to get things repackaged in Florida, right? Like, right, if we didn't have to do that, you know, our costs would be significantly lower and the need for taking out those loans would be lower, mm-hmm, you know? So suspend or repeal the Jones Act indefinitely, right?
Okay.
That is super important, right? So that we can move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Right, without unnecessary additional taxes added onto things. The other thing, and this is kind of like a kick them while they're down, the FEMA deadline for reimbursement, right? To apply for grants from FEMA, to because your house was destroyed, because a tree fell through your living room, right? Those things cost money. You can apply for funds, right? But you need to apply for those funds 60 days after a state of emergency is called, right? And so, when was that? That was in, the 20s in September,
mm-hmm,
right? So, 60 days from then is going to be in the 20s in November,
right?
90% of the island still doesn't have electricity. How the fuck are they supposed to download these forms and fill them out and send them in?
Yeah. Wow.
Right? And so, like, those deadlines need to be extended, right? Yeah. At least until, let's say, 75% of the island has electricity again, right?
And I can even access the,
right,
the forms.
Or lifted. Why do those deadlines even exist?
Well, I mean, because then people could potentially be like, well, I fucked up my house some other way,
right,
3 months later,
true.
And, you know? But right now...
Two months isn't a long time at all after such a tragedy.
Wow. All right, so let's, on that note, let's take another quick break here, and then let's talk about actually how you, the listener, can actually donate and help Puerto Rico in this situation, all right? Stay tuned.
If only the world was less like this.
I could use a smoke.
say put that out?
And more like this.
I could use a smoke.
You murderer! I might have children one day!
Smoking kills, unless you kill first. If you're around a smoker, you will die. Smokers may look relaxed and like they're having fun. Don't believe it. Vote yes on Proposition 421. Let's outlaw smoking everywhere, even in people's homes, and allow honest citizens to legally kill anyone who smokes. Let's live in a world without smokers. Prohibition works. Let's prove it. Let's move up the food chain. It's time to smoke the smokers. Vote yes on Proposition 421.
That's the good stuff right there. Welcome back to Adult Kindergarten. Again, I'm Franklin Contreras, here with Joe Mazzio, Steve Dizador, and our special guest, Mr. Daniel Morales Armstrong.
Making us all smarter today.
And more sad.
It's not his fault.
He's a truth teller.
Yeah, totally. It's pretty good stuff today. So now we're just going to pretty much touch upon, again, as I mentioned before, ways that you can help out and what organizations are actually worth noting and supporting as we move forward and move into a brighter and better future.
So how can we help? You know, not everyone's going to have the means or the time or really the skills, right, to go down and to the island and help out. Not that you need to be super skilled or trained, you know, to clear branches, right? Like, if that's the part that you're doing, or to hand out sandwiches if that's the part that you're doing, right? But for, you know, we also need people doing things here, right? And so one of the major ways is to call your representatives. Okay, so in New York, that's Chuck Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand. Okay, call them and say, look, here are the things that we need you to do. Okay, and those are the things I listed before, right? Cancel, and if not cancel, then audit the debt, right? Suspend or repeal the Jones Act indefinitely and extend the FEMA aid disbursement, reimbursement filing deadline. Okay, right. So ask those things. The other thing, Puerto Rico, like the U.S. really needs to come to reckoning with Puerto Rico's status, right? So that's a conversation that like really needs to happen. And I hope, you know, the main focus here is definitely on relief, right? But I hope that people are coming to terms with the fact that in our current status, we have not received sufficient relief aid, right? And so like 16 people died during the hurricane and hundreds have died since then, right? And I'd say the vast majority of those were preventable deaths.
Yeah.
Right? And it was like the callous indifference towards Puerto Rico that led to those people dying. Right? And so do you think that that would have happened if we were an independent nation? Right? I mean, would it have been a struggle to respond?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
But would we have gotten support from our neighbors?
Right.
Right? Probably in a way that would have made a difference.
Yeah.
Right? So maybe, let's say 50 people instead of 700 had died, you know? Do I want anybody to die from this stuff? No.
No.
Right? Do I prefer that fewer people die than more people? If we could save any of those preventable deaths, let's do that. Right? So we really need to reckon with Puerto Rico's status. And I hope that people who have had their heads in their asses for too long about like where Puerto Rico is and where Puerto Rico should be, right, can get a wake-up call.
Yeah.
So call your reps. If you want to find a script for that, Defend Puerto Rico is an awesome organization that has already fundraised more than $50,000 for Puerto Rico relief efforts. They organized an awesome event earlier this year about like Puerto Ricans understanding the impact that the Jones Act had on Puerto Rico. They've done fundraisers, like all sorts of stuff. They have people on the ground down there who are actually doing the work. So if you search up Defend Puerto Rico on social media, look them up on the internet, they have a script for talking to your elected officials, right? You put in your address, it tells you who your elected officials are, it gives you their numbers, and it gives you a script that says, here are the points you need to touch on, right? Leave a message, talk to one of their aides, talk to whoever's in their office, right? The more calls that they get, the more likely they are to do something, right? Like, think about the psychology of it, right? You're an elected official, right? You get 2 calls a week about Puerto Rico, right? And 10 calls a week about, you know, there's a fire hydrant that's broken on my block.
Yeah.
right? What are you going to put more effort towards? The broken fire hydrant.
Right.
Right? Yeah. But if you get 20, 40, 60, 80, 100 calls about Puerto Rico a week, you're like, okay, my constituents are talking, and this is something that's important to them.
Right.
Right? So, like, that takes, what, all of 15 minutes, 20 minutes, right? It's something that you can do on your lunch break. It's something that you could do, like, on your way home from work.
And it's free.
And it's free, man. Right?
It's an important thing.
All right, so there's that. I'd say to follow news sources that are actually like doing work on the ground. So, you know, to what extent can we trust that, you know, the major news outlets are going to give the kind of continuous reporting that Puerto Rico deserves? Probably not much, right? Like after a while, there's a tipping point where Puerto Rico is no longer the it thing that's going to get them the clicks.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not saying that every reporter doesn't give a fuck about Puerto Rico. It's just the reality that, like, it's not going to get as much coverage as time goes on, and it will need coverage, right?
Donald Trump will do something stupid that will shift the attention.
Right. And so, you know, follow some of those journalism organizations or, like, guerrilla journalism groups. You have something called Report, Reimagine, Revive Puerto Rico. And that's being run by, again, I mentioned Rosa Clemente, who went to Albany back in the day.
Okay.
Nice. And then was the
vice. The way you know, baby.
And then was the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party a few years back.
Wow.
Like on the national scale.
Yeah. So who is this?
Rosa Clemente.
So
she put together a small group of Puerto Ricans from the diaspora who have skills in reporting, right?
Wow.
And documenting and reporting and journalism, etc. And they went down there for... I mean, she's still down there. But most of the group was there for, I think, about 10 days. And they hit all sorts of corners of the island to, like, bring aid, to help people out, to document their stories and things like that in ways that, like, we're not getting that kind of information from CNN, from NBC, etc.
Right.
And so you can follow them. The page on Facebook is Report Reimagine Revive Puerto Rico. And the hashtag is hashtag PR on the map. There's also another page on Puerto Rico called PR Informa, right? And you can follow Defend Puerto Rico also, okay? There's a reporter, David Begnaud, who was doing a lot of good work. He was down there immediately after the hurricane hit and was really going around and actually talking to people in the streets in a way that many others were not. He's back down there now. So, and then, you know, donate to some of these organizations. I told you Defend Puerto Rico fundraised more than 50,000, and they've just increased their fundraising goal to 75,000. And they've been really doing the work of galvanizing the political agency of the diaspora over the past few years. They didn't just pop up overnight, right? And they've done really, really wonderful stuff. So I suggest, you know, working with them. But also there's something called Colectiva Feminista en Construcción. Okay, and you can find them on Facebook. And they're a political activism group down in Puerto Rico. Any of the protests that I went to in the summertime, there was usually a representative from there. And, like, they weren't just, like, on the sidelines. Like, they were in it. They were the ones who were really pushing things forward. And they're talking about racial justice, economic justice, gender equality, like, important things that are facing the people of Puerto Rico. They're raising funds to support the efforts to get the essentials to the people of Puerto Rico. And so, you know, $10, $20, $30 can go a long way in that regard. And they're sending these things called Brigadas Feministas, right? Feminist brigades. And it's groups of people who are going and meeting the needs of communities, right? If community X needs trees cleared out of the road, they go down there with machetes and they clear the trees, right?
Wow.
If community Y needs clean water, they figure out how to get it to them, right?
Wow.
So they are the ones who are, they're the real deal. So Colectiva Feminista en Construcción.
Wow.
Okay, nice.
Cool.
Well, that's a good ending point here for Puerto Rico, don't you think, guys? Or
sad story of Puerto Rico, yeah. And I mean, hopefully there are brighter horizons and history, yeah. So thank you, man. That was really illuminating.
I definitely learned a lot. And I guess now it's time for some happy music in the background. We can do a little quick wrap up.
So we have a game that I think Steve wants to play.
I do. We appreciate you so much for coming in. You enlightened us quite a bit about Puerto Rico. So the goal for this quiz, and we'll see how everybody enjoys it, is we bring somebody in to talk about a subject, and then we quiz them on something completely opposite. So since you are an expert on Puerto Rico, I would like to quiz you on the state of Wyoming.
Okay.
All righty. So, question one. Who is the governor of Wyoming? Is it A, Donald Trump, B, Matt Mead, C, John Barrasso, or D, Jeff Flake?
All right, so I know it's not A.
Okay.
Whether he knows it's not A. let's see, man. I kind of want to lean towards Jeff Flake.
Jeff Flake is incorrect. He's actually a senator from Arizona. The correct answer would be D, Matt Mead.
Impossible quiz.
What is the capital? All right, question two. What is the capital of Wyoming? Is it A, Spokane? Is it B, Donald Trump? Is it C, Jackson? Or is it D, Cheyenne?
I'm going to go with A.
That's actually a city in Washington. The correct answer was D, Cheyenne.
Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Cheyenne, Wyoming.
So for our listeners in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
For our listeners in Cheyenne, Wyoming, we know as much about you as you know about Puerto Rico. So get on it.
This is a good trade-off. This is a good trade-off. I appreciate this.
Question three. In what year did Wyoming become a state? A, 1890, B, 1887, C, Donald Trump, or D, yesterday?
What were A and B again?
A, 1890, B, 1887.
I'm gonna go with A.
That is correct. Ding, 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 ding.
All right.
You play music louder when you get an answer, right? Yeah.
What? Two more to go.
Oh, two more questions.
All right, all right. I don't know how many. Four, which of these famous people are from Wyoming?
All right.
A, actor Jim Beaver. B, former baseball player.
Who's Jim Beaver?
Mike Devereaux. C, Donald Trump. Or D, no one famous is from Wyoming.
So my heart tells me D, but
that's correct. Oh, I looked up who's famous from Wyoming and got Jim Beaver and Mike Devereaux. Does anyone know where they are?
I have no idea.
Okay, so D is correct. Yeah, two Beaver. Of the last
Jim
two.
Beaver. Jim Beaver sounds like a drink. That's Jim Beam. Sorry.
Yeah. Now, finally, last question. Who is the president of Wyoming? A, Al Gore. B, Al Franken. C, Al Pacino. Or D, Donald Trump?
Unfortunately, that's D.
There you go. Finished up strong. Three of the last three.
Just for the record, that was a hard quiz.
Yeah.
Who the fuck knows about Wyoming?
I would have failed. That was the point, right? Well, no, that's the random quiz there.
Well, like we like to set our guests up for failure.
We'll do hashtag Wyoming, and that's what we'll get our good influence.
Yeah.
There we go.
You're going to get and lose all Wyoming followers.
There we go.
All fucking Wyoming followers.
Awesome.
All right. Well, again, 50%?
Yeah, you 60. You got 3 out of 5.
All right. So what did we learn today? Steve, what did you learn today?
I learned that Puerto Ricans were forcefully relocated to the mainland United States.
Okay. And Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I learned that obviously, as I kept saying, that the history and current status of Puerto Rico is a lot more dark than I think a lot of us even understand. And you know, we should learn more about it because it's pretty fucked up.
All right. And then, Danny, what did you learn today?
I learned that Wyoming's capital is Cheyenne.
There we go. See, we teach as well here.
Yeah, so perfect. This is Adult Kindergarten, the show. We try.
Wait, what did you learn? Frank, whoa.
Frank, you didn't learn anything. He's trying to screw out.
It's Frankie. Frankie didn't pay attention the whole time.
Yeah, I definitely was in here, man. I learned about the feminista. Construcción, and I don't know where to actually now, you know, put my money towards when it comes to donations and things.
Yeah.
Because I heard a lot of stupid
a good
things
cause
about,
that's not going to take your money
right.
And buy a Lamborghini.
Yeah. Because I've heard a lot of sketchy things about the Red Cross and things like that. So now that I have an actual.
Dude, they're one of our sponsors, man. All right, I got to go back and delete that.
Damn.
Folks, don't let Puerto Rico. And the relief efforts in Puerto Rico exit the like U.S. imaginary, right? Like this is something that like is worth talking about, even if you're not Puerto Rican, you know, like Think about, and don't think about, like, the people of Puerto Rico needing help because they're U.S. citizens, right? They're entitled to U.S. services because they're U.S. citizens. Right. But they need aid because a lot of them are fucking dying.
Right.
Right? Like, we send aid all over the world, and we send money for stuff that's not good all over the world. So, like, you know, let's do the right thing.
All right. So, yes, let's definitely do the right thing, guys.
Thank you for your time, man.
Yeah, thank you for your time, Daniel.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, everyone, for sticking through. Next week, we'll have another interesting episode.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. And, this has been Adult Kindergarten. My name is Franklin Contreras.
I am Steve Dizidore.
I'm Joe Mazzio. And our guest,
Daniel Morales Armstrong.
Harvard graduate.
Graduate.
Do you have, like, a Twitter handle or anything that you like to push?
Where can we follow your stuff, man?
Anything that you like to plug other than the relief efforts?
I think for now, relief efforts is good.
Okay. There we go.
Cool.
Right,
yeah.
Selfless man.
Selfless man.
Selfless man. All right.
Well, we'll see you then.
Goodbye.
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 Goodbye. Goodbye.